coming to you from the Summit Responsible Solutions Studios, and welcome to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Tom McCubbin, Extension Agent Emeritus with University of Florida, and host emeritus of Better Lawns and Gardens. Certainly happy to have you today. We'll be getting your calls later in the program. And, of course, you can text us anytime at 23680. Good morning, Lizzie.
Good morning. How are you?
Well, we're up and running.
Yeah, I know, right? Here we are.
Yeah. So how's everything at your house? Are you able to grow anything at this time of year? It's just so hot there, it's melting away.
It's crazy the amount of hot peppers that I have growing.
Really?
Yes, I've got habaneros, I've got cayenne, and I've got jalapenos just going, I love the heat. I'm going, okay.
What do you do with them?
I give them to everybody.
Okay. Do turkeys eat them?
I don't know. I didn't think about that.
Yeah. Maybe some hot turkey. But spices is already there. Yeah.
I know people like give their chickens like the flakes, pepper flakes and stuff. And it's supposed to help either with their digestive. I'm not a chicken person, so yeah. I don't know.
Do you know this little weed called oxalis, Cuban purple oxalis? It grows as a weed, little bulb.
Okay.
And my neighbor collects that and gives it to her son's chickens. And she said they love it. It's amazing. Huh. And we were at a restaurant, and my son, somebody was finished up a salad. My son said, I'll take that. So he took it, and he gave it to the chickens. And the chickens loved it. I guess they like greens. I mean, maybe they're better than we are. I don't know.
Well, it's funny because what I found is that our turkeys absolutely love black-eyed Susans.
Oh, really?
So I'll let them do their semi-free range. So, yeah, I had to, when my black-eyed Susan started coming back this year, I had to keep them away from them because I turned my back, got distracted, did something else in the yard, came back, and they had cleared all my black-eyed Susans out.
Wow.
So, yeah.
That's kind of like the monarch butterflies. The larva stage clears out all the host plants for the larva stage. It's kind of interesting. Anyway, Teresa's off today, and I hope she's having a good time. So you have me and Lizzie.
You are so lucky.
Yeah, it's going to be a good program today. We'll have all different kind of things. And people, listeners can do their part too. Call in later. Or you can text us at any time, 23680. Thought I'd start off with the weather because we got a note from Beverly earlier, I guess about midweek, about Tallahassee going to be washed away or
yes,
something
washed
like that.
Away. Yes. You know, you guys better buckle down is all I'm saying.
As I went up and looked at it, it looks like maybe they're getting 7 inches, some flooding, 12 inches maximum in some areas. But yeah. As I looked at the radar, it looks like it's moving out or been moving out.
Mm.
So, you know, they got the rain. They got more rain than they need, and we have less rain than I need. I don't know how it's been at your house.
Half a dozen one the other. We've had a few days where I thought we were going to get rain. The radar said we were going to get rain.
I know.
Rain,
I got the warning.
And absolutely nothing.
Yeah,
so
I had 2 inches over about the last 4 days. And so here's the situation at my place. My neighbor is out of town. And so I take care of their property as far as watering and care of their plants. And so it seems like every time they leave to go out of town, it doesn't rain. So here I am out there with my hose watering their plants, a fair amount of container plants, and container plants even dry out on a rainy day.
Mm-hmm.
So you
yes.
got to go through and take care of them. So
job security you.
I know. I tell them, I say, you know, every time you go out of town, so I don't know what's going to happen anyway. Hey, we got a lot of things coming up. First day of summer on Sunday. And I think you have an idea that the legislative body should legislate that summer starts in May and not in June.
Yes, I'm part of Good Morning Orlando, so I'm going to talk with our host, Simon Conway, of seeing who he can reach out to, maybe even DeSantis himself, and see what we can do, because I am sorry, but in the state of Florida, May 1st, and sometimes in mid-April, it's summertime.
Summertime.
So.
Summertime.
Good song.
Yeah, and anyway, also on Sunday, big day, Father's Day. Yeah, it's kind of
happy Father's Day to you, and happy Father's Day to all those listening,
and to your husband Shrek. Yeah,
thank you.
Very good. I got my Father's Day gift early. My kids got together and said, "Dad, your phone is antiquated, so we're going to get you an early Father's Day gift." They gave me a new phone.
Oh, so
a new cell phone.
So they hate you.
They did.
Because I don't know about you, but given me, I am literally fixing to go back to a flip phone. It's not that I can't handle it, but I really can't stand.
These new phones have so many things on them, mm-hmm. you know? My phone was probably 7 years old, I would guess, somewhere around there. And I got used to it.
Yeah.
And now I've got to get used to all these new buttons. But there's some neat things about it, I have to admit. So anyway, I'm getting used to it, and that's my Father's Day gift, and I appreciate it very much. Thank you, kids.
That was very sweet of them, actually.
That was, yes. Okay, I've got a list here I want to do, and it's the best cities for urban gardening. Just a little old. It came out a couple of months ago, I guess. It's from a group called Lawn Starter, and their lawn care services was what they have. And so they said that the number one spot has changed. I can't believe this. They said last year, New York City was number one.
What?
I can't believe it. Yeah.
Oh, well, you know what, though? I mean, you got to think about it. They have no place to grow anything. So that would actually make sense that they've perfected it.
Yeah, well, they rank them as far as interest in gardening. They rank them as far as available garden centers and things like that. Atlanta took over number one. Florida has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 out of the top 10. And Miami's number 2. And then we have Jacksonville 5, Orlando 6, Fort Myers 8, and Tampa number 9. So kind of interesting. Tell you what, we're going to be back. Don't go away. And we'll be here. So you can just go ahead and give us a call if you want from the Summit Responsible Solutions Studios. It's a Saturday morning. You're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Tom McCubbin, and this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network. And good morning to you again, and welcome back to Better Lawns and Gardens. Tom McCubbin here. We were finishing up with the best cities for urban gardening. Here's what they use to rank them. Access to community gardens, average yard size, growing season, which means such as number of growing days, precipitation, sun, number of garden centers and other supply stores, how the local area ranks in garden clubs, laws, and internet searches. It took into account the right to garden, and Florida, I guess Illinois and Maine have that law, right to garden. Like you can put a garden, I guess, in your front yard in Orlando. So it's interesting. But anyway, again, Atlanta's number one. Then number two is Miami, which surprised me a little bit, I guess. Houston is number 3. St. Louis, Missouri is number 4. Jacksonville, Florida made number 5. Orlando made number 6. Cincinnati made number 7, Fort Myers number 8, and number 9, Tampa, and 10 was Austin, Texas. So there you go. As far as the best cities to garden, see if you're there. They actually ranked 100 of them, and I'll have to go through and find maybe a couple more in Florida. Like Lakeland was 35, Melbourne number 26, and we'll look at some of the others in just a little bit there. Anyway, next hour, Lance Wallheim, author of Citrus, A Gardener's and Fruit Lover's Guide, will be with us and talking about his new book. Actually, it's a revised edition. It's a great book. It's probably one of the best books on citrus for homeowners that I know of, and maybe commercial also. But I wanted a preview to get Florida update on greening diseases of citrus, so I contacted Matt Smith, fruit specialist with the University of Florida in Lake County. I also talked with Dana Venrick, a quality greens specialist, about the availability of resistant trees. And I just made a few notes here from Matt Smith. And I wanted to know what the effects of cold was on the citrus that we already have. And the cold as of February, we got a lot less damage than we thought, he said, or what we expected. Burned leaves, fruit damage, probably some just general twig dieback, and that was the general problem that they had. And he felt, I think, at that time that the trees are going to recover, at least most of them. My next question to him was, did the freeze have an effect on the Asian psyllid? You know, that's the little insect mm-hmm. that goes around and carries the bacteria that affects the trees and causes greening. And he said he expected it to reduce the population of the insect for a short period of time. Now, I have to tell you, in my neighborhood, we have a few citrus trees, not many left anymore, but I have not seen the psyllid in a good while. So it's a possibility the populations are pretty well reduced. And I have a list of green resistant trees. And if I asked him if there's any particular that he would recommend. So I've got his list here. And number one on the top of it there was sugarbell. And he said it ripens in late November and December and is very tasty. Now, here's the thing. When we say resistant, it doesn't mean that they're totally resistant. It means they're tolerant more than anything else. So we have to be careful when we talk about it. But it means that they're just more tolerant to the disease. But if we take good care of them, it's going to be okay. He said all the ones that are OLL4, they're developed by the University of Florida, like the sweet orange, which is a red color, super sweet, he said. And all the OOL 8 and 20s are also good lines. It's one called the Donaldson. It was found at the USDA farm as a 30-year-old tree, and they're propagating that one there. There's a bunch of others. You can find out all of them, like a Tango Mandarin Marathon is one that is fairly popular. It holds its quality fruit on the tree for a long time. And there's a good lemon also. So, and there's one called Gator Bites, a small but a good mandarin. So there are a number of them. If you want to find out more of the tree list, what I did, I just went up online and checked out the citrus greening tolerant citrus varieties. And there's a whole list of them, plus some of the new releases from the university. Now, here's the other thing. Where are you going to find them? You know, you want the trees, can you just go down to your normal garden center? So I talked with Dana Vendrick about that, and I talked to him yesterday, and Dana said they are sold out right now, and he expects more trees in about a month. So many of the nurseries may have the same problem. The university has one nursery. It's not the university, it's the Master Gardeners in Hernando County. And I went up on their website, but I didn't get any information on what's available at this time. So if you just go ahead and look for citrus varieties, resistance, nurseries, greening resistance, then you're going to get a lot of the information that you need. So that should be a good one for you. Anyway, so greening looks like it's going to be there. Looks like we have the resistant varieties that you can plant, you can get them. That means also that you're going to have to give them good care. This is me managing the psyllids with insecticide sprays at each time when you get a, you know, flush of new growth. Keep the minor nutrients on the trees, keep them fertilized well, and we can raise citrus. Now, Matt also told me that, you know, we can still raise the citrus. So he doesn't want to see us stop raising the citrus. And, well, it might be something that you'll want to try anyway. Okay, how's the garden doing? That's my next little thought here. How's my garden doing? It's done except for peppers, and as Lizzie mentioned, she has tons of peppers also, hot peppers. Yes. I don't raise the hot peppers. I raise the bell peppers, and so they're still producing. I just harvested my last tomatoes. They're done. I'm getting all the old crops out at this particular time because they'll just harbor diseases, and I need to get them out so that we'll be having future plantings. And you know, the next planting time is the middle of August, but on my list here of things to do, the next time to sow seeds for tomatoes, peppers, and eggplant is the middle of July. So it's not very far away.
No, it isn't.
You know, July 4th is not that far away also. I'll be tilling the ground. I'll be getting ready to plant the seeds, as I said, of the tomatoes, peppers, and eggplants in mid-July to have transplants for August. The best tomatoes this year in my garden were Juliet, Sweetheart, and Park's Whopper.
Okay.
And I had one called Chef Delight, and it was good too. But the I don't know, we're big eaters of the little grape tomatoes and little cherry tomatoes.
I grew some of what they call the little pear they're cherry tomatoes, but they're yellow, and they're called pear tomatoes. Mm-hmm. Those are really good.
Yeah.
Very interesting looking, too.
They have good flavor?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, that's good. And they're yellow.
Yes, yeah. They look like pears.
I had one called Sunny Gold one time, and it was good, too.
Yes.
I haven't grown those in a while.
Yes.
Some of the problems I have, and I really have to keep evaluating them, is what kind of diseases they get, whether they get nematodes on the roots, and how bad they crack. some of them, as soon as we get the rains coming in, they just really crack open. So yes, it can be a problem.
Now, these pear ones, this vine has exploded to the point where I had to put a steel rod through the center of it, of my tomato cage, because it went nuts and was just fell over and was like just, I mean, it was pulling the vine, the tomato cage out of the ground. Yeah. So I'd actually take a steel rod and run it through the center of it. It's I've never had this experience, and I'm not a tomato professional by all means, or a grower professional. However, I have never seen this in my life. So
some of the tomatoes really take off. I mean, the indeterminate types, and I have some that'll grow 8 feet tall. And so I have to stake those. I have no, even if my tomato cages are averaging about 5 feet, mm-hmm. and I still have to stake them. Otherwise, the wind will blow them. You get so many vines and everything.
Right.
So it's a type of problem. Okay, here's a list of what I'm doing. That's the garden, getting the garden revamped, getting it ready to go, be planting in mid-August. So you get all the weedy type things out, because they harbor insects and disease also. I just want clear planting area, and I want it that way for a little bit of time. So here's what I'm doing in the garden. Repotting, lots of plants are root-bound in containers, so I need to go ahead and give them new containers is what I'm doing. And I'm behind. I'm just way behind in that. I'm getting ready to start seeds. Also, some of the flowers, marigolds and zinnias. Had beautiful zinnias this year. Really attractive. And the one that I had that was the best was from Parks Picks. You can just go out and get the old California Giants, and they do okay. It's a cheap seed. When you start getting varietal names, the seed gets more expensive. But the marigolds are doing well. They'll be finishing up here pretty soon, and I just need to plant some new ones. And the zinnias are finishing up. I harvested, I think, what's going to be just about my last zinnias. Now, here's something kind of neat that I did. I obtained a bulb of the midnight oil caladium. If you're into horticulture and you follow things along, you'll know that there was a new caladium this year called midnight oil. And it was developed by Dr. Hartman of Classic Caladiums in Lake Placid, Florida. And when I was down there during, August last year, we talked about it. He talked about it. But the bulbs weren't available. And it was going to come out through Proven Winners, although I never saw it on the market. It may have been out there, possibly. I got my bulb. I went up online and got my bulb out of Georgia. And so I started it. Took a long time to come up, but it's up now, and it's a beautiful little plant. Hadn't grown very much, got a couple of leaves. I'm looking for much more out of it, but it is very dark, and it does have an old look to it, kind of purplish in color. And so it's called Midnight Oil, and I'll keep you updated on it as I can, but it's a new one for me. I obtained some new achimenes, if you know what achimenes are.
No.
They're Africa violet relatives, little pink, blue, multicolor flowers, and I was down to the pinks. That's all I had left. I did have some reds left also, but they are not a good red. So I bought some new ones of those. I bought a blue one, and I bought one that are mixed colors.
And
so they're not in bloom yet, but they're coming up, and they're kind of neat. The other neat thing that I did in the landscape with the help of my son-in-law, I created an arbor to reduce sunlight and grow plants like things that I hang down, foliage plants, some orchids that are in the shade of a tree to start off with. And it's just a neat thing that I can hang plants under. Mm-hmm. And as the plants develop and look good, then I can move them out into the landscape.
Oh, that is actually a genius idea.
I love this. I have my orchids there. It's just an arbor. It's not anything. It's not bad looking, but anyway, it's not what you call beautiful either. And I can have the plants there, and it's very neat. Tell you what, if it's Saturday, you know what that means. We're coming to you, Better Lawns and Gardens, and you're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens, and I'm Tom McCubbin, and this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network. We'll be right back. Good morning. Thank you for joining me today on Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Tom McCubbin, your host for today. Teresa's off, but I do want to remind you of Teresa's newsletter, and so you can go ahead and get that if you'd like to. She has a monthly gardening newsletter in your backyard. You can get it by going up to she-consulting.com. That's she-consulting.com. And sign up for free, and there's no spam or anything like that there. You find out what to do in the landscape each month, Teresa's plant of the month, Teresa's design tips, landscaper malpractice. I love that one.
I you know, it's funny because then I didn't realize the amount of what you'd call the malpractice for plant and landscape until I started getting Teresa's newsletter. And then now I drive around going, now I'm judging. I'm like,
you're the critic now.
Exactly.
Yeah. And you got a portion there too, because you always have a portion with your turkeys or or something.
It's shenanigans.
Kind of, shenanigans, that's what you call it.
Yes.
Yeah. That's what my grandmother used to call some of those things too. Anyway, I've got one other thing. We'll get to your calls here in just a second. You feel free to give us a call, 1-888-45-LAWNS. Or 455-2967. The Asian citrus psyllid, remember I was talking about greening, that insect moves it around. The university reported that there's some good news. The good news is there's some insects out there eating the Asian psyllid eggs.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So we got the minute pirate bug. If you want to see some of these, just go up and do a Google search on them. Minute pirate bug, green lacewing larva. That looks like ladybug larva, and the ladybug, a lady beetle named mealybug destroyer. And that those are three. So you can go up and look at them. Mealybug destroyer, green lacewing larva, and minute pirate bug. Those are all that are out there feeding on the egg. So there may be some help. You may not have to do as much spraying if you find those in your landscape, which would be kind of nice. Let's go to Bill in Ormond Beach. What do you say? Bill, good morning to you.
Good morning, Tom. Hey, I've got a problem weed that I tried to send a picture to Lizzie, but I guess it didn't go through. It's almost succulent-like. It's very low to the ground. It becomes vining. It's just green leaves. You might get a flower if you let it grow long enough. And I've
What color is the flower?
It's blue? No, it's been a while since I've seen it.
Is it bluish?
It could be.
Yeah, sounds like it might be dayflower. And that is a fairly common weed. It fits your description pretty much. That vines across the surface of the soil, and it just pops up amongst the St. Augustine and other grasses.
Right.
You know, it doesn't make a difference really, because all those weeds, we only have a limited number of weed control products. And you're going to need, it's a broadleaf weed, so you're going to need a broadleaf weed control product. The best one I find out there right now is one called Roundup for Southern Lawns. Now, you know Roundup as a general weed killer, but they also have one that you can use to control weeds in lawns, and it's called Roundup for Southern Lawns, and I find that that does very good. Now, when you get into fertilizer season, BioAdvanced has a weed and feed that works out very well. So you have a couple of products. And now, some other liquids may work fine also, but just make sure it says your lawn type on it. Make sure it says for broadleaf weeds. But that one Roundup product is one that has some of the ingredients in it that commercial people use also.
Yeah, my main problem, because it's in a bed, and it's intermingled. It comes up, you know, in different plants. You know,
yeah,
and
it'll
so
do that. Yep.
I have used the trowel. I mean, I've dug it up. I've been very tedious at getting these single leaves, getting the roots and all that, and they just keep coming up. And this is for a couple of years now.
Yep, yep. It's a very persistent, you might say. So
yeah.
That's what I have to do, too. Now, if it's in a spot where you can spot kill it, then you do have some of these weed control products out there. But if it's intermingled, you don't have any choice but to pull it out.
Right, right. Okay.
That probably wasn't the advice you wanted, but that's about all that's out there right now, especially when it's intermingled. Now, if it was a grassy weed intermingled with shrubs and flowers and stuff, yeah. I might be able to give you something to take that out. There's products for that over the top. But when it comes to broadleaf, we're in there pulling them out or spot treating them, one or the other. Okay, Bill?
All right. Thank you, Tom.
Yeah, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Let's go to Melbourne, Florida. What do you say? And talk with Alice. Alice, good morning to you.
Hi there. It's so great to hear your voice again, and we miss you. And
thank you. I'll be here periodically. I'll be back in, I think, July also. Yeah, Teresa's
really?
Given me some time to take over.
You know, we appreciate who's taking your place, too.
Oh, Teresa's a great person. Teresa and I have worked together for years and years and years, and she couldn't be a better person to take this position.
Really, really cares. Well, how often to cut grass in Melbourne? Because, you know, I've been cutting it myself for years because I didn't want the weed seeds to come up, that the weeds seem to come in here and there within the grass. And I had Bermuda all originally, but that's kind of worked itself out, and now I've got a combination of things. But I just wondered if the lawn cutters that work on my neighbor's lawns, they come a couple of times a week, it seems, and they're just running around with those lawnmowers and scattering the weed seeds all over the place. But I just wondered what you do about the weeds. I mean, and also how often is a good time to cut grass?
Well, I cut mine once a week, and out of having to do it, I believe. During the summertime, it's possible you may need to cut it twice a week, but no, normally once a week. As far as weeds in a lawn, just mowing it once a week should be fine. You're not going to move that many seeds around. I wouldn't worry about that because you're cutting them before they're mature. But if you need a weed control product, summer's not the best time to put it down. I'll be honest, too hot. You'll end up damaging your lawn also, or you can do spot weed control. But if you need weed control, we do it in the spring or the fall. So that may help you out a little bit, Alice. Hope it does. Alice, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. And we're up against the break, as you can tell by the sound there. But we're going to still be taking your calls, so why don't you just go ahead and give us a call. 1-888-45-LAWNS, 1-888-455-2967, or you can text us at 23680. I'll be back. I'm Tom McCubbin. This is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network. And welcome back to Better Lawns and Gardens. We're here coming to you from the Summit Responsible Solutions Studios, and we're happy to have you. Lizzie's at the controls. Without her, I can't do anything.
I have faith in you, Tom. I believe that you can jump over here and you can easily take over.
Oh, I wish. I don't have the talent you have for that, that's for sure.
Thank you.
If you'd like to give us a call, this is the final half hour, Better Lawns and Gardens. 1-888-45-LAWNS or 1-888-455-2967, or you can text us at 23680. Alice had a little follow-up question. We ran out of time there about trimming her hibiscus.
Yes.
And I guess it was getting kind of dense, and she lives in Melbourne, so
yes.
It probably didn't have as much damage. And what she can do is she can thin it out, or she can cut it back. And what the general rule on that is, you cut back one-third of the stems,
okay,
and you let the other third come up in flower, and you do that as needed.
Okay.
But she could thin it out if she wants to and trim it back.
Now, where would you, so, because I have a lot of hibiscus by, I went through and replanted all mine after the freeze, took 90% of them out, but where would you trim, inside, outside, every other
I just open it up
stem.
and trim out, every other stem, and every long old stems, ones that may stop flowering, maybe ones that have gotten some damage to them or something like that, and just kind of open it up a little bit. Don't have to do a whole lot. Hibiscus is kind of a twiggy plant anyway.
Right. And also what I ran into in the past when I'm staying ahead of the game is the little white bugs that end up on them. There's like, they're not flies, but they look like almost
mealybugs, probably.
There you go, yes.
Yeah, mealybugs. Yeah, you need to get those under control, and you can use one of the general insecticides. Even a soap, insecticidal soap will work on them.
Okay.
But you got to hit them.
Yes.
Now, and then the other option would be to use one of the systemic insecticides that you apply to the ground. Mm. And BioAdvance has one that you can just, they have it in several forms, granular or liquid, and you can apply it to the ground as they tell you, and it's taken up, and then it controls the mealybugs.
Okay. Well, thank you for that.
Okay. I have my top five here. Top five shrubs that survive the cold. You know, I have a whole bunch of things here about freeze recovery, and I may get to them, I may not. But the top five shrubs that survived the cold. And number one at the top here is Indian hawthorn. I really like Indian hawthorn. I'm consulting in a community where we're having to replace some shrubs, but the Indian hawthorn survived well. The next one, definite survivor, no problem at all, dwarf yaupon holly. And that one there is a good one for the landscapes. It's the workhorse, durable. You can round it up. You can prune it into meatballs if you want to, but it's a good one. We can keep low, make a little hedge out of it. The other one that's in my yard that I went down to 24 degrees, and this one here had no damage, the bush daisy, and it's out and it's flowering, it's yellow, it's beautiful. So it made it through that cold, a little bit of burn back, but just really tough. The other another one, suspensum viburnum. No problem. It's a lower growing viburnum, only gets about 4 or 5 feet tall. And that one there has done well. Number five, even though I'm not always happy with them, but azaleas. Azaleas seem to flower better this year than they have in previous years. And that's what happens after cold. It seems to mature the buds and get them developing.
Mine were gorgeous.
I know.
I don't have that many. I only have a couple. And I was like, oh, okay, so there we are. We're looking pretty now. Okay.
I know. They need good care. And many of us don't give them the care they need, the water and the fertilizer. But, it's a durable shrub. Now, I've got an extra one here. I threw in an extra one. It should be six, I guess, but I like five. It's a dwarf Walter viburnum, and they flowered good this year. You have the very tall Walter viburnums, which are native plants, and you have the dwarf one, and the dwarfs have looked good too, and they flowered. They were out flowering very early. Now, let me give you another shrub, tree form, that I think the cold really helped, and that is the crepe myrtles. Mm-hmm. They are beautiful. In this one community where I do consultant works, this is the best that I've seen with the crepe myrtles, the pinks, the reddish-colored ones, the whites. They're just producing great displays, and I think it's all because they got the cold. You know, they're more northern plants. They're not tropicals. We do have a tropical crepe myrtle also, queen crepe myrtle, but the typical ones have done very well, and they're just looking beautiful at this time. Okay, let me talk a little bit about the freeze. I mentioned that, and I wanted to mention that one for you. There's a number of plants that are having a tough time with the freeze, and one of them right now is the Norfolk Island pine. As you drive along, do you notice the Norfolk Island pines turning brown? They look like Christmas trees. They aren't really pine trees. They're distant relatives at the best. But there's all different degrees of damage to Norfolk Island pines. Some of them are totally brown. Some of them are green on one side, brown on the other side. Some of them, they're brown at the top, green at the bottom. So what's going to happen to them? I think only time's going to tell, but I think many of them are going to recover and do fine. But going up the trunk, you'll notice that probably it's green at the bottom. Some of them are still green at the top. So what do you do? People want to know, do I cut them out? Do I take them out? Are they done? I would wait. I'd wait till at least the end of the summer and see what happens. Now, here's the problem. When the Norfolk Island pines come back, they're probably not going to look like the plants that you remember, the little Christmas tree forms. Most of the Norfolk Island pines in Central Florida and probably a little bit further south were planted at Christmas time. We bought them as these neat little Christmas trees. They probably came with decorations on them, and we put them out in the landscape. Some of them now are 40 feet tall or more, and those are the ones that are damaged. I mean, you just drive through the neighborhoods. You'll see the brown trees sticking up. Look like Christmas trees.
It's crazy.
They're Norfolk Island pines.
Yeah.
So the big question is, are they going to survive? I think most of them are going to survive, but not be the tree that you really remember. Okay, give them time. Avocados, mangoes, and carambolas. Frozen back, All of them are probably going to come back from the base. The problem is with the avocados and mangoes, you've probably lost the grafted variety, the variety they had. So you just have to wait and see what you get. If it's coming from above the graft, that's good. It's going to be the one you remember. If it's below the graft, it's going to be a tree that probably not a very good type. Like the mangoes would probably be something like a turpentine mango. Avocados would be just a regular avocado. But, you know, you may enjoy them still. I don't think the mangoes you're going to enjoy if they taste like turpentine. I don't know. Carambolas, I had a person come up in church and said, you know what? My carambola is coming back. And I had mentioned that it probably would. It's going to come back as multiple stems, and it will be the same carambola that you remember. So it's okay. Mother Nature is kind of amazing. As I've been going through this cold period, it's been 4 months now since we had the cold, and the things that are coming back are crotons in many areas are coming back. The dwarf scheffleras like Trinette are coming back and not doing real bad. They're coming back. Okay. Exoras, I had given up on exoras pretty much, but you know, the exoras are coming up from below the ground. Oh. It's amazing. This one community that I have, they're coming up all over the place. Yeah, and there are a few dead ones, that's for sure. But here's the question you have to ask yourself. Do you have time to wait? Do you want to wait for those plants to recover?
Yeah.
And so if you don't, then you replant them. And on the market right now, there seems to be plenty of shrubs out there, plenty of replacements. I was looking at some the other day. Crotons look good. Dwarf scheffleras look good. I haven't checked for the exoras. But they're back. The nurseries have done a great job of getting these back on the market.
And I usually around August, I should say, I start kind of like, you know, pushing out the idea of getting your frost blankets. If we didn't just learn from what we just went through, just right now, this week, if you got the money, go on Amazon or wherever and go ahead and purchase your frost blankets for upcoming. Because if you did like I did, I just had to replace a bunch of items and plants and stuff that I really, really don't want to lose. So, and also we have a text. Tom from Lake Nona wants to know, Lizzie, why do you dislike backyard chickens? Yes, they can be noisy, but provide amusement, eggs, fertilizer, and rooster meat. Tom, 100%. I am not anti backyard chickens. I highly encourage everybody to have them. I just personally, when I was younger, I had chickens, and I weighed out the options of having turkeys, and I like raising turkeys a lot better.
I'll tell you, when I was a kid, we had chickens, mm-hmm. and the only place I want to see chickens now is on my plate.
That you didn't have to
prep. In some form, eggs, chicken legs. I love chicken legs, things of that nature. But I cleaned out so many chicken coops.
Mm-hmm.
Evidently, maybe this gentleman here has not cleaned out the chicken coops like I had.
Right.
And yeah, you do get the fertilizer from them and everything like that. But right now, chickens on my plate. That's where I like to see them.
Yes.
Now, there's a couple of people trying to send pictures here.
We cannot get pictures through text. You have to email them. Probably it'd be easier to email them to Teresa, and that's Teresa without an H, teresa.watkins@live.com, teresa.watkins@live.com.
Yeah, I think this person did send that there, so we're good there. Here's one here from Jay in Melbourne. Do encore azaleas do well all day sun on the southern and warm side of the house? They would rather have a filter sun, but yes, they can survive in full sun if you take good care of them. But filter sun for azaleas, I think, is best. So we're coming to you from the Summit Responsible Solution. Want to thank our sponsors, Black Cow, Summit Responsible Solutions, Quality Greens Specialist with Dana Enrich, Peterson's Nursery, Howie and Karen. And please let them know that you appreciate them sponsoring us and their business and their nurseries, that's for sure. Lizzie, thank you very much. And from the Summit Responsible Solutions, if it's Saturday morning, guess what? We're coming to you with Better Lawns and Gardens. And this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network.